This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte home sales are hot. Despite low inventory, homes have been flying off the shelves. And because of low inventory, buyers have found themselves in bidding wars while facing higher prices. If you're a seller, times are good. Why is this happening and how long can it last? Is this real or is it one of those real estate bubbles? On this hot August day, we take the temperature of real estate with Maren Brisson-Kuster, president of the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association and a broker realtor with Cottingham Chalk Hayes Realtors. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
And with us also in our studio here at Spirit Square is Mark Vittner, a managing director and senior economist at Wells Fargo. Welcome back.
Good to be with you.
And Eli Portillo is here. He follows all of this every day as the economic development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Good morning. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
First of all, there was a big story in the paper this morning, which we got to address right off the bat. Charlotte home sales fell 9% in July from a year ago due to persistently low supplies, which I've just talked about, weak new listings, and ongoing price increases. I'm just curious about, Maren, what weak listings means.
Well, that means we don't have enough new listings coming on the market to really satisfy our demand.
So how is that different from a low supply? That's the same thing, right?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Supply indicates and really refers to what we have currently sitting on the market. Weak new listings are new listings, period. You list your home you'd never listed in the last 12 months, you are considered a brand new listing. And we just don't have enough of those, especially at the price points below $350,000. We actually have an increase in inventory at prices higher than that.
So a healthy inventory in a market this size would be what?
About 6 months.
And our inventory today is?
Our average is right at 2 months, but it's
Whoa.
Very neighborhood-driven and neighborhood-specific. And price point, over 350, we're seeing an increase. We're seeing almost a 6% or 6 month supply versus below 350, we're seeing less than 2 months supply.
So what you're saying is that if you have a house that's above that level, it's taking, on average, 6 months to sell it.
No, that is how long it would take to sell the inventory we have currently listed active on the market.
Help me out here, Mark.
Well, I tell you, the norms have changed. The 6 months inventory was what we've long thought would be the norm. And at that level, it was kind of the old pricing model where you would go in and you would kind of expect to put an offer on a house 10% below the asking price and meet the seller somewhere in between. That's not the model today. If you're in a highly desirable neighborhood, there's very little inventory, and homes are going for at or above the asking price typically. And I don't know if we're ever going to get back to the six-month norm. There's a lot of things that have changed.
You mean in Charlotte or around the country?
Around the country. You know, it was just a couple of years ago that markets with a two-month supply were California, Silicon Valley. They were the exception. Now it's pretty much the norm. And I think a normal level of inventory may only be about 4 months because of some of the changes that we've seen in the marketplace.
Well, prior to the recession, those red-hot markets that you just mentioned, like Silicon Valley and those other markets in California, what do they call it, the Inland Empire out there in California, they collapsed dramatically and drastically because they were overvalued to begin with and overheated to begin with, correct? And then, of course, it was exacerbated by the mortgage problems and the banking failures. But are we witnessing the buildup to a bubble that can't be sustained?
Now, I don't think so. I mean, one of the changes that we've had in the marketplace is that the way the housing market used to function is that counties used to outdo one another to provide the greatest incentive for builders to come in and build homes. Mm-hmm. And the old model was, well, we're going to bring in residential development and then commercial is going to follow it. So we'll use residential development as a loss leader to bring in offices and retail. Well, in the last cycle, those offices and retail didn't materialize. And so a lot of counties found themselves hard-pressed. And now counties are making builders pay for all of the development cost and then some. So they have to build schools, parks, road improvements. And so the starting price for new homes is now significantly higher than what it was in prior cycles. And so not only do we not have a whole lot of listings, but we don't have a whole lot of new construction coming in the pipeline either. And I think that's changed the dynamics in a big way. It's not people outbidding one another simply because credit is easy, which was within the last cycle. Here it's really a supply issue.
Well, and absolutely. I want to tie in on that. The reality is new construction is supposed to come in and backfill when we have lower numbers of resale homes to sell. But that's not necessarily happening in our market because of the price escalations. So it's a very interesting spot we find ourselves in right now, frankly.
And I think one key difference that I've seen is that there's really no bounce back of the condo market since the recession. Before that, we had tons of condos being built, condo towers like The View, 51 stories with hundreds of units. Now, we've got a few dozen condos under construction in the county, and that's really just not come back at all. And that takes a big segment, especially at some lower price points, out of the market.
Why hasn't it come back? Why do people prefer to live? If you're going to live downtown in a tower, why don't you want to own the unit you're living in as opposed to renting it?
Well, I think there's a few reasons for that. One reason is that before the recession, a condo is something that people could put a deposit on, watch it appreciate while it was still under construction or even before that. But the collapse of real estate a few years ago really erased that. So you saw much less willingness for people to tie up their money in a big deposit for a new condo tower since the recession. For example, uptown, there's been one condo tower proposed since the recession, which was One Brevard. It would be a luxury tower about 30 stories near the arena. And they opened a sales office. They had a big splashy event. They tried to sell them, and they couldn't get people to commit. People weren't willing to put down the money to reserve one of those units before construction started, and they canceled the project.
How much of it has to do with the fact that what happened with The View, where The View, of course, it coincided with the recession, but The View came in and they were selling these very high dollar condominiums, and suddenly it became an apartment building, and the people who had bought the condominiums still have condominiums in this apartment building. Are people reluctant to trust these developers of these big buildings to follow through on what they say?
I think that there's a lot more hesitance in buyers out there. The View was one very prominent example that really hit the market at the worst possible time, and they ended up suing people who were trying to get out of their contracts, and the whole project went through foreclosure. And there's also much more hesitancy in lenders. So it's not just buyers who are less willing to put down their money. It's much harder for a developer to get a condo project underway, also for that reason, because it's harder for them to secure financing.
Maren, you've been in this business since, I think, 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
About this. So you've seen things change over time. How is the Charlotte market, how's the Charlotte buyer different from it was, from what they want from the pre-recession era?
Well, oftentimes they're not local, and that's a big change. I'm born and raised here, and I can tell you in the 14 years I've been selling real estate, it's amazing. The buyer I put in my car has changed drastically. So you have a lot of transient people moving here. And on the condo market, I mean, it has a lot to do with it. Condos characteristically in our market area were for first-time home buyers primarily. Mm-hmm. Now, we obviously had some empty nester products, but very few, and those always sold well. But our first-time home buyers are really struggling in the condo market because of very strict FHA guidelines. They don't have much money to put down. And so the new bill that's come through and it should be signed off on, that's a huge relief for the condo market. So I do think we're going to see a huge uptick in that because now they're going to be revisiting the guidelines for the investor percentage. And now what that means is you can't have X number of investors in a property to get FHA financing.
And to be clear about this, the investors are people who are going to buy units to rent them out as
yes.
opposed to buy units to live
yes.
in them.
Yes, and you can be both. You can buy that condo and live there for 10 years and then move up, start a family, move out into the burbs, and turn your unit over to a rental because right. it's a great investment property for you. And that is a really good way to build our wealth.
So when you say most people are coming here from elsewhere, most buyers are coming here from elsewhere, are they wanting a significantly different product? Are they wanting a product that we don't have a lot of? Are they driving construction of new product that is different from what we've had before because that's what they want and that's who the buyer is?
Absolutely. Of course they are. I mean, they also want our traditional in-town old school neighborhoods as well. I mean, there's something to be said for that feel. So it really depends on what they're looking for, what type of lifestyle. A lot of people are focusing on walkability right now, local and not local. That's huge for us. So you're seeing our suburban areas really increase their walkability scores as well.
I was going to talk about this much later in the program, but you're bringing it up now. Densification. Mark, that's a trend that seems to be happening here, particularly in the inner core. If you look at South Park and the environs of South Park through Cotswold, Park Road, Elizabeth, densification, multi-unit, multi-family units, live-work-play developments, et cetera. Is this a permanent trend, do you think?
It's a long-running trend. I don't know if anything's permanent. Yeah, other than death and taxes, but I don't know that anything – but certainly a long-running trend. And a lot of people look at the densification, urbanism, suburban-urban is what they call Cotswold and South Park. They look at it as, well, it's all these millennials. It's all these young people that are coming to Charlotte. And there are a lot of young people coming here. Charlotte's actually added more tech jobs than the Research Triangle since the recession ended. Which is a stat that I didn't even write about because I wasn't quite sure that it was true until I triple-checked it and said, oh, my gosh. I mean, and so we've added 40% more tech jobs than we have tech graduates. So we've had this huge influx of young people that have come from other parts of the country, mostly college-educated. A lot of them want to live in an environment where – not necessarily where they live, work, and play all the time in those options, but that where they have lots of options where they can walk to or they can grab an Uber. Yeah. And so that's happening here. It's happening all over the country.
But you're seeing in the South Park area, you're seeing apartments go up galore. In the Cotswold area, there have been three home builders building in little pockets of around Sherwood Forest on North Sharon Amity. I think Bonterra Builders is out there. Classica Homes is out there. Somebody else is out there across the street from Classica. And they're building, I don't know, 8, 10, 20 houses. And they're above the level of an entry-level homeowner's price range. Who's buying those houses? Who wants those houses in those areas? Who's demanding those houses?
You have a lot of move-up buyers. You also have people relocating here who want that location. But I'm going to tell you, it's a strange anomaly. And I'm very proud of it since it's my hometown. A lot of us don't want to leave. So we might have lived in Cotswold. We come back to Charlotte. We want to build our home in Cotswold.
In Cotswold. And so this is replacing the stock that was there in the 60s and the 50s and updating it for modern reality.
The other thing that's happening, and this is unique to this cycle, is that many home buyers are skipping entry-level homes. It used to be that you would buy an entry-level home, you would build some equity, and then you would trade up. A lot of people are buying a trade-up, what would traditionally have been a trade-up home, as their first home.
Because they've been renting and saving?
Well, because they put off home ownership until they reached a later point in life, where now they're worried about schools as opposed to worrying just about home ownership.
So what does that mean for the people who are in entry-level homes who now want to move up? Are there enough people to buy those homes from them?
There probably is, because there's not a lot of entry-level new home development going on. Most of the new construction that we're seeing is our homes that are priced above entry level, because the increase in development cost has been so great. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to build a traditional starter home.
And these in-town, close-in locations where you see developers, say in Cotswold or Dilworth or Sedgefield, buying up smaller pieces of land and putting as many houses as they can on them, possibly even in an upscale townhouse configuration, that increases the costs as well, because they're paying a lot more for that land than they would have in past cycles, because it's just so much more in demand than the further out locations in a lot of cases.
But they're building a better product than was there previously, so can't they easily get more money for the product that they're building?
Yes, and that also drives up the prices, because they have to build a better product to sell for more money to justify the land cost.
We'll come back and talk more about this burgeoning market here and what it means and why home sales are down and the prices are up and densification in just a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Myers Park Baptist Church, hosting a fundraiser for Charlotte Pride at Birdsong Brewery August 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. Myers Park Baptist, an inclusive church. Learn more at mpbconline.org. And Novant Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, providing comprehensive services and customized treatment plans. More at novanthealth.org/ Orthopedics. Well, on this week's local news roundup, protests break out before a CMS board meeting about how teachers should handle transgender students. The board also begins discussions on how to diversify magnet schools. The Whitewater Center reopens its rafting channels after being shut down in June because of a rafter's death. And the Olympics are going on in Rio with some athletes from here. Our roundtable of reporters talk about those and many other stories on this program tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, reporters and editors across America are grappling with how to cover Donald Trump, his unorthodox presidential campaign, and what some call dangerous rhetoric have led journalists to debate the value of objectivity, the media, and Donald Trump.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon on listener-supported public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the real estate market in Charlotte, which is hot as a pistol. Trouble is, there's not enough homes and prices continue to rise, which is kind of a self-fulfilling cycle. We'll talk about why in a moment. Maren Brisson-Kuster is with us. She's the president of the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association and a broker realtor with Cottingham Chalk Hayes. Mark Vittner is a managing director and senior economist at Wells Fargo, and Eli Portillo is an economic development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. We got into densification a minute ago, and what does this mean, this drive toward densification in these older inner core neighborhoods like South Park, like Elizabeth, like Sedgefield, which you mentioned? And I think Madison Park might be on the horizon for that kind of thing. What does that mean for the look, the feel, the affordability of these neighborhoods?
Well, a lot of times what it means is conflict. This is one of the issues that I've seen come up the most heatedly in the last few years as people try to build denser and denser developments, whether that's apartments or townhouses or even just larger houses on smaller existing lots. A lot of the neighbors in places like Sedgefield, Dilworth, feel really pressured by this wave of development. It's creating traffic problems and it's creating crowded schools in popular areas. But on the other hand, it also makes the area more walkable. It makes it more feasible to run public transportation to denser areas. So finding some kind of balance is really going to be key as the city develops and more people want to move to these places.
And is this being done because the newcomers, the people that you put in your car and take to see houses, they want to live closer in? Do they want to live inside the Beltway, or do they want to live inside? What's the Woodlawn Road number? Is it like number 4 or something like that? The Woodlawn Road, Wendover, do they want to live inside that? Is that what's happening? Is that why Sedgefield and these places are burgeoning now and all this new construction is going on?
I would tell you the answer is D, all the above, because people don't always want to live in the inner core inside 485. You have a lot of locals that are very regionalized. If they grew up in a certain sector of town, they want to remain there. We have a lot of out-of-towners moving here that do not mind the commute. They're used to commuting 2 hours one way. So 45-minute commute to them down towards Union County, quite frankly, or York County, they don't mind at all. They love it, and it gets them out of the city. And so a lot of people moving here are looking for that, interestingly enough. They want that lifestyle. They want to see trees in their yard. They want to see deer in their front yard. They want that, and you can get that here.
And I think that one thing that that we can tend to do is focus too much on the inner neighborhoods and kind of ignore some of the growth that's happening around on the outer ring. But what's interesting about that growth is even that tends to be more dense and urban feeling. For example, at Providence Road and 485, there's 3 major mixed-use developments underway that are going to include Whole Foods, hotels, offices, and hundreds of for-sale houses.
Wow. And this is going to continue, Mark. You've said that this is going to continue around and invade the smaller towns and the outlying suburbs around Charlotte. Why?
Even in Concord, when you go to Concord in downtown Concord is becoming more urban, becoming more dense. Downtown Rock Hill is becoming more dense. And suburban Rock Hill is becoming more dense. And so this is something that's happening everywhere. And really, it is... I think it's driven by technology in some ways, and that the cell phone makes you more aware of everything that's going on around you. It also increases your mobility, increases your safety, and it makes it easier to live in an urban environment. When I moved downtown 15 years ago, people would say, "Well, what do you do when you go to the mall?" And I said, "Well, you get in the car and you drive to the mall." But now that's not even a question anymore. I mean, the phone brings them all to you. You don't have to worry about it.
And yes, you've said that you admit you are a prolific online buyer. So, and yet we see these mixed-use developments in the far-flung outreaches of Charlotte, where they're building live, work, play, a lot of retail things. Do we need all this retail? Why do we need it? If you can get on Amazon and have it delivered the next morning, why do you need it?
A lot of it is entertainment. A lot of it is restaurants, entertainment venues, and there's a lot of it that's specialty retail. I mean, retail has been figuring it out in terms of what they can and can't do in terms of competing with online shopping. What we've got, and we've got a lot of grocery anchored retail. A lot of what's being built today competes very well in the online environment that we're in.
Are we overbuilding in terms of commercial real estate, or is that on par to grow with like with what's happening in the residential real estate market?
I don't think we're overbuilding. I do think that when recessions come around, some people are going to get hurt. Some projects will come around right as the economy softens. But we're not going to be in a position where we're going to have a significant overhang of commercial real estate or residential real estate. With maybe the exception of some apartments.
Because you've written, Eli, that institutional sales of commercial real estate are approaching $1 billion for the year in Charlotte. Put that number into perspective. It sounds enormous, is it?
It would put us on pace to be close to some of the record years, but I don't believe it would put us on pace to break pre-recession records. So for some perspective, we're still not quite at those peak levels that we saw before 2008.
Is the nature of the commercial product that's being built different than what it was pre-recession?
Yes, I think the biggest difference is just the number of apartments, and that is a shift that's happened nationwide in cities. Commercial real estate, which includes apartments, really has taken off, but I don't think you're going to see as much retail, such as big box stores, strip centers, what are called power centers. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see less of that, way more apartments, and those are trends that have been continuing for some time.
Now, we know that Charlotte's growing, and it's on this list of the top five, I think, growing cities in the country, fastest growing cities in the country. But one of your jobs at Wells Fargo, Mark, is to keep your eye on and report on housing and development throughout the country. How do we compare to what's going on nationwide?
Well, in the single-family market, I believe we're the 10th largest new single-family home market. A lot of that development is actually taking place in the South Carolina suburbs because it's been easier and it's less costly to develop in York County and Lancaster County. We've also had the retirees coming in there in big numbers. But certainly things have been improving. The June housing permits number was the highest since 2006. So we are seeing that activity is perking up a little bit. Raleigh is the 15th largest market. In terms of percentage growth, the Carolinas are seeing a great deal of growth in Charleston, Greenville. The Triad has seen some big gains in recent.
But I remember pre-recession, you would be hard pressed to drive around outlying areas of Charlotte and not find vacant land, farmland, what used to be farmland or wooded land, suddenly becoming just acre after acre after acre of single-family home development, brand-new homes.
And there was also a lot of vacant developed lots. Uh-huh. I was up in Denver yesterday. And Lincoln County, I remember when the economy went into the tank, they said, oh, they've got a 10-year supply of vacant lots.
Yeah.
Well, they've been taken down pretty quickly, and they've got a nice housing boom going on there on the western side of the lake, and lots of folks moving in there. The other areas that were kind of left hanging for a while were eastern Iredale County,
yeah.
And all of this overhang from the housing slump is largely behind us.
You're out in the car every day with people, Maron. It doesn't feel to me like it felt pre-recession, where you could literally drive toward Ballantyne or someplace else, even up north in northern Charlotte, and just see brand new homes, to acres of them. It doesn't feel that way to me. Are new construction builders building as quickly and as many homes as they used to?
Well, they are and they aren't. I mean, they have to be a little more conservative this time around. mean, we saw the largest crash most of us who are alive have ever seen. And so that really hit a lot of builders' pockets where it hurt, and national builders and local. So they're going to be much more conservative with it. We've also talked about affordability of land and cost of development. That's grown exponentially, so that's made it harder for them to do. But really, we're seeing infill construction for the most part within the city limits, and we are still seeing the larger suburbs being built up in outlying areas. It's just not as close to town.
What does there seem to be more of a demand for? What seems to be selling better, resale or new construction?
Resale, but that's also a skewed number because we have more resale products to sell than we do new construction. So I'm
and
not.
And yet not enough.
Yes. Oh, we definitely do not have enough of either, quite frankly, product, especially the closer you get to Center City.
And yet the sale of homes is down 9% year over year in July. And Mark, I believe you say that the demand for homes in Charlotte and the ensuing bidding wars, which we're going to talk about in a second, is happening at the same time that home ownership in this country has dropped to the lowest levels since 1965.
Yeah, and that's as far back as we have statistics, so it may have dropped even lower than that. But
why the drop?
Well, some of it is demographics in that we've got this surge in young people. And I think we're very close to seeing the bottom in the home ownership rate, because the home ownership rate rises by 25 percentage points when folks go from being 25 to 34 to being 35 to 44. And the leading edge of the millennials are right there at 35, 36. And so I think that home ownership is getting set to rise again. Here in Charlotte, we've had much stronger job growth, much stronger population growth, and that's why housing is booming here.
So for those millennials who have not been living in their parents' basements but have been living in their own apartments, what does that mean for the tens of thousands of apartments that have been going up if these people are suddenly going to be looking for houses to live in?
Well, I think that question might be directed to me as a millennial who doesn't live in his parents' basement here and also a development reporter who writes about apartments a lot. Right now, the apartment market is doing incredibly well as it's done in Charlotte. The vacancy rate is less than 4%. So that means for every 100 apartments in Charlotte, there's fewer than 4 that aren't occupied right now. And that's why people are pouring so much money into developing new apartments. It looks like a can't miss right now. I do think as people age out of apartments, start having kids, want a dog, want a lawn, want more space, that is going to be somewhat of a problem. But the biggest thing that could save that is population growth. As long as people keep moving here, most people who move here are going to rent at first, especially if they're young, coming for a first job. So really long-term population growth is what could keep driving that market. But it's going to be an issue.
And the post-millennial generation, so the one that's coming next, is has even stronger demographics that are going to favor urban living. They're more multicultural, multi-ethnic. And I think they'll be more just as inclined to live in town. The other thing about the apartment development is that it's very much the reverse of what we saw with condos. And it's very hard to take condos to apartments. It's not as hard to convert an apartment tower into a condo tower.
So if you have a bunch of people renting who like where they live, they like the building they live, they like the people they're living around, you might see them suddenly push to have the place developed into a condominium?
Well, and I'll tell you, I'm married to a developer who builds apartment complexes in our region. And I will tell you that when they build them very nicely, very high end. So they could be converted one day. That is the goal. So I think I'm the leading edge of that millennial generation. Mm-hmm. And so I'll tell you, it's interesting because it's a microcosm. Look how different we all are.
Let me ask you a question. When you say an apartment is high end or luxury, which is what you see when you look at the ads for all these places, aside from kitchens and bathrooms, what makes them high end or luxury?
That's what people care about the most, to be frank, kitchens and bathrooms. When you go look at a house to purchase or to lease, that's really what you focus on. But flooring, the exterior of the property, the amenities that they offer, and or the proximity to other amenities.
So I was going to ignore you for this question because you're a real estate broker, but I'll bring you into this. I was going to ask Mark, I'll let the two of you answer this. Does it make sense to rent when you can buy? If you can afford to get into a house Does it make sense to rent? It gives you, you can get out of the rental quickly. You can't get out of the house necessarily quickly. But if monetarily, economically, does it make sense?
Well, it always depends on the person and the location of the property. Because location is everything in real estate. And if you've got a property in a great location and you plan on being there for a while, it makes sense to buy. If you if you're not quite sure where you're going to be 3 years from now, it probably makes sense to rent.
You point out that nationwide home prices are rising much faster than incomes, so it's hard for buyers to save for that down payment. And right now, with the rent the recovery, restrictions on getting a mortgage are much, much stricter than they used to be. So you got to have that money, and it's got to be yours. It can't be coming from another source, I think. Wages have been suppressed for a very long time, and this is a little off the topic, but is that what's going to take? Is that what it's going to take for employers to start paying more when they realize that people can't afford to buy the products that they're making?
Well, historically, that's been a selling point for Charlotte, and one of the reasons that companies located here was that they could move to Charlotte, and for what they paid their employees, more of them could afford to own a house.
Right.
And that's one of the things that's brought industry here. I think that that continues to play into our favor. At the lunch I spoke at yesterday at our table, the conversation was all about companies trying to hire workers away from one another and how much wages were being bid higher. And it's a conversation that, quite frankly, I hadn't heard in years. And so this seems to be more common today. I think that wages are rising a bit faster now than people realize.
Are people who are renting, and God knows there are a lot of people renting because there's all these apartments being built, and you say that it's only 4% vacancy at the moment. Are they doing so because that's the way they want to live, or are they doing so because they can't get 20% down on a house that they want to live in that's equal to the apartment in terms of amenities?
I think it's probably both. Take South End, for example. Very desirable neighborhood. Lots of young people want to live there. We've got to be near our breweries and dog parks and all that, you know.
Yep.
So if you want to buy there, there's very little supply. The townhouses that have been developed there sell very quickly, and the prices escalate very quickly.
Right.
So if you want to live in that neighborhood, you're a younger person, maybe on a first or second job, it's a much more doable option to rent right now than buy, and that's largely a function of the supply of housing that's there.
Do you see that changing?
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's always going to be type of lifestyle you choose. And it's not necessarily because they can't afford to purchase a home. It's because they don't want to, either because they're not sure where they want to be. They're not sure how long they're going to stay in Charlotte. A lot of people, as we were speaking about before the show, move here and think it's a very short-term move. And they end up living here and loving it and meeting their new spouse and staying for forever. So I think that you see that commonly in Charlotte and its surrounding area. And I think that that's going to continue. But I do want to make the point, you don't have to have 20% down anymore at all. I see clients on even over $1 million home that are putting 5% down. Now, that would make me sweat.
Here we
personally.
Go again.
But point is, they have the liquidity and the credit score and the income to afford it. So I don't think that's ever going to be commonplace. I don't think someone with an extremely low credit score is ever going to be able, or hopefully anyway, ever going to be able to put 5% down.
Right.
But I think that you're starting to see some softening in the borrowing.
As long as we don't have no income, no job.
Oh, absolutely not. That was horrible.
The ninja loans were really what killed the housing market.
All right, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the shortage of product, the shortage of sellers, the abundance of buyers, and the rising of prices, and how this perfect storm for sellers, at least, has come together and what it means for you. Mark Vintner has to leave us now from Wells Fargo, but thank you for your time. I appreciate it very much.
Good to be with you.
We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mecklenburg Eye Associates recommending sunglasses with 100 UV or higher to protect eyes from possible cataract and macular degeneration. More at Mecklenburg Eye Associates, 800-628-EYES or MecEye.com. Well, coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, reporters and editors are having a debate over how to cover Donald Trump. Some argue that if you believe Trump is a dangerous demagogue, normal journalistic standards of objectivity need not apply. Trump says the mainstream news media are biased against him, and many supporters agree. So, on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes, Susan Page and other and her guests will be talking about that. If you'd like to talk about real estate and the housing market in Charlotte, you can email us right now at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
This week on Morning Edition, each presidential candidate is offering economic ideas and throwing shade on the other.
Basically, it's cut taxes on the wealthy, get out of the way, and let the wealthy do whatever they want. I have a very different approach. I intend to make the wealthy pay their fair share to build this economy.
Also this week, trials and triumphs at the Olympics. Listen to Morning Edition every weekday morning.
I'm Marshall Terry. Join me weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about real estate and the real estate market in Charlotte with low inventory, a lot of buyers, not enough sellers, rising prices. Maren Brisson-Kuster is with us, the president of the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association and a broker realtor at Cottingham Chalk Hayes Realtors. Eli Portillo, the economic development reporter for the Charlotte Observer, is here. How have rising prices of homes that are available to buy affected buyers?
Well, they're getting in bidding wars. They're paying a little bit more for the product. But it's still not more than significantly most of the country. So we're still seeing really good affordability rates here. And that's important for people to note. And like Mark noted, that's why companies are still looking to relocate here, because their employees can still afford a lot of home for their money.
And several years ago, it was touted by lots of developers and builders and real estate agents that, you know, interest rates are at historic lows. So now you can get into more house than you used to be able to afford because you're not, the monthly payment will be lower than it would have been. Is that still true, given that housing prices are rising, what, 6.5% on average?
Well, we're right around 5% now, which is where we want to be, because that's everywhere taken into account, our 18-county region and our MLS. So 5% is healthy, but it still is. Mortgage interest rates are still historically low. It's mind-boggling to me, because we keep holding our breath in the industry thinking, oh, they're going to shoot up, but they just haven't yet. Now they're starting to rise slowly. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to impact affordability, because we're not rising in double-digit numbers in our market appreciation. And I think that is extremely important to know. It is a seller's market, but it is not some crazy off-the-wall, super strong seller's market. This is a soft seller's market, I call it. We still don't have great seller confidence for a number of reasons. It's closely tied to consumer confidence, and that's just still rebounding back from the major downturn we suffered from.
So seller confidence is one of the reasons why there aren't enough sellers? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, 100%. You're seeing a lot of renovations. So I'll pick on Area 5, for an example, in the Metro study that just came out yesterday. So in Area 5, you're seeing a huge number of home renovations occurring over $10,000. Now, what that indicates to us is that those homeowners aren't ready to sell yet. But now, finally, they have equity in their homes again. They're tapping equity lines. They've saved up money. They're doing the renovations that they know they need to do in order to sell for the max amount of dollars, because they're looking at the photos online. They know their competition, and they know they need that new kitchen, or they need to revamp their master bath. And so they're doing those projects now. Now, that's probably a 2-year lead time, but we're seeing that happen. They're also pretty confident that they're going to have a job tomorrow. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's so important.
But also, if you're going to spend, I don't know what the average reno is costing people, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, if you're going to spend that, when it's done, why not just stay put?
Well, most people don't like to stay put. A lot of people like change. The average time in a home in our market area is 7 years.
Really?
Yes. So people, and especially the younger the generation, the more transient they are.
And are they moving up when they move, or are they moving laterally?
Most people are moving up. If they make a lateral move, they're probably moving further out for a larger product.
Isn't that moving up?
Not if it's the same price.
Well, okay. So up is defined by price in your – okay. As it was reported this morning, it's the second consecutive month of weakened year-over-year home sales, with home sales being down 9% in July compared to last July. Is that a sign of the market cooling or just a sign that there simply isn't product available to buy?
I think you'll talk to a lot of people who say it's the latter, that there's just not enough product. I have a colleague who's moving who just put his house on the market and sold it in 2 days with multiple offers. So, you know, there's definitely still people buying. So I think that if we had more supply, we'd see sales go up. And there are builders who are looking to tap into that, trying to get into this market as quickly as possible and trying to fill some of that lack that we have. For example, you mentioned earlier how it doesn't feel like pre-recession where there's acres and acres of new houses. I'd say if you drive around some parts of the area, it definitely does feel like that.
Okay.
I did a story on growth in Fort Mill and the surrounding areas a few months ago, and I was astounded driving around there how much was just cleared out, was farmland a few months ago, and now houses are going up. And another example is the Steel Creek area. Not traditionally one of the strongest markets, really just exploding right now. There's one project that's in rezoning. City needs to decide whether they're going to allow it or not. That would put more than 500 townhouses on what's currently a dairy farm at Brown Greer Road, and that's Pulte looking to build that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people trying to jump in and catch that lack of supply because they know if they can build right now, they can sell it quickly.
Mm. They know, developers know that. Evidently, homeowners don't know that because you talked about the lack of homeowner confidence. How much of it is a lack of confidence over, gee, I'm comfortable where I am. I know I can afford this, but I'm not sure my job's going to be here next week or next month or next year, so maybe I should stay put. Versus, if I put my house on the market, I have to move.
Where am I going to go?
Where am I going to go?
That is the leading question from every homeowner that I meet with about selling their home. Where am I going to go? We're back to where we were in 2004, 5, and 6, where a lot of homeowners are putting their new home under contract prior to even listing their current home because they want to feel like they have somewhere to go. A family with, you know, the average family with 2.5 kids don't really want to move to temporary housing
right
in between their new home.
But how dangerous is that? Because you could be stuck with two mortgages.
Well, it's absolutely a risk. I'm very risk averse. I'm never a fan of my clients doing it. However, sometimes if you have the liquidity to do it, it's an option for you. I would say it's not the most conservative option. I do always encourage my sellers to at least get their house on the market and under contract first. And I would say most still are doing that. They're getting their home under contract and then they're promptly going to put another new home under contract.
Is it a legitimate fear that if you list your home because the market's high and hot right now and you might get a really good price for your house, particularly if you get into a bidding war with these people who are writing love letters to convince you to sell to them, that when you get an offer you like and you take it, there's nothing out there that you like or that you can afford because prices keep going up. How big a risk is that?
It's a big risk. Very big. But more of not finding something you love and less than the home prices increasing that drastically because it's sort of a pass-through. You know, you made more for your home, you might pay a little bit more for your new home. That's not the biggest concern. The big concern is actually finding something out there you like. That's why everybody starts shopping online, quite frankly, even if you have a realtor, long before you put your house on the market, because you're out there looking on Zillow or Realtor.com to see what you could get out there.
But Zillow isn't accurate.
No. The pricing, the Zestimates, absolutely not. Ask any realtor out there and they'll tell you. It's definitely not accurate. But it's great for the pictures, the access.
But does that hurt you? Because as a realtor, you're talking to clients who say, well, I was on Zillow yesterday, and I see that my house is worth X. Or I see that the house I'm thinking about buying is worth X. And you're saying, well, no, it's not.
It's not a problem for me. Actually, I use it as a tool. I mean, the reality is Zillow is just one more marketing portal. It's not competition with realtors. So I always kind of giggle when people say that. I mean, it's a great segue for me. Really, your Zestimate says XYZ. Well, here are the actual comps. And oh, by the way, I'll take you to your neighbor's homes if you'd like to preview your competition.
Right.
That's the way you handle Zillow. I mean, it's a tool, nothing more.
Karen on Facebook writes, construction cranes are building more unaffordable apartments. Where are they building homes? And can you now afford a down payment as a graduate of college with debt? Can you even qualify for a loan? I'm afraid to buy a home because I don't feel job secure anymore. All good questions.
Well, I think the affordability question that's kind of baked into that is one that's been becoming much more of an issue in the last few years, especially with apartments. Right now you have the average rent in Charlotte has topped $1,000. That's up about 8%, a little bit less than that from a year ago. Obviously, average wages are not going up 8% a year, so that's become an issue. But I'd say it's really restricted to certain geographies. There's areas where apartments are $2,500, $3,000 a month for some new places, such as South End, parts of Uptown, some of the places in Plaza Midwood that are really growing fast. There's a lot of what's called Class B or Class C product out there where the apartments are older, they're not as nice, that are still much more affordable.
So the $1,000 rent figure gets you what?
That is the average across the whole Charlotte market, and it really depends on where you're looking.
So if you want a luxury apartment with new, relatively new, high-end finishes and appliances and a nice bathroom, what's that going to cost you for a two-bedroom apartment?
Where at? There's the question.
Where at? What would the high be? Or what would the median be?
I'd say that there's an apartment building that opened last year on South Boulevard right near Uptown called 1100 South.
Right.
There, a new two-bedroom on a corner unit is, I believe, about $3,000.
Holy cow.
It's amazing what the high-end rental market can procure.
So for $3,000 a month, what kind of, and I know a lot of variables go into the price of your mortgage and your monthly payment because it depends on how much money you put down, et cetera. But what can you get for $3,000 on the market today in a house?
Well,
comparable to the apartment we're just talking
about. I'll pick on in town, right? Because we'll compare it. So in town, you can get, depending on the neighborhood, quite frankly, you can get anywhere from a 1,600 square foot bungalow up to a 4,500 square foot on half an acre or more home within a 20-minute drive of Uptown Charlotte. So you still can afford a whole lot, which is why, arguably, a lot of people will choose to own versus rent, because you will still always get more for your money when you own, and you're at least reinvesting in your own investment versus padding someone else's pocket with your rent.
Okay. Mike on Twitter writes, I'd be curious to hear what areas your guests think will pop along the Blue Line extension between NoDa and the University area.
Well, there have been a lot of development proposals sort of on either end of that. Mm-hmm. The University area is seeing a lot of new retail, some new for sale, and a lot of apartments. The NoDa area, sort of below 36th Street and to Uptown, is just seeing tons of apartments. I believe there's more than 1,200 that are either proposed or under construction there.
So it's going to be South End Redux.
South End Redux, but it sort of has more already there. Okay. South End was a little bit more of a blank slate. NoDa definitely has an identity, so there's a little bit more conflict there. You know,
how much of the development through Dilworth and Sedgefield even is due to the Blue Line?
Well, I think there's a huge apartment boom that's happened in South End that a lot of people attribute almost entirely to
the
Blue
Line. I'm talking about the infill housing development.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's definitely a tie-in there. It might probably be the same, you know, just because it's so close to drive-in. For example, I live in Dilworth. I drive to work uptown. The Blue Line's not a commuting option from where I live. But it does kind of create a little bit of a shared corridor between, say, Dilworth, Sedgefield, and South Boulevard that's really popular.
Martin emails, I can testify that everything you're talking about is true. Just finished a year-and-a-half search for a new home inside the Fairview Sardis Rhema perimeter. Last few months, any desirable house that came on the market would be gone in a day. Buyers are now accepting houses knowing that they will need to do remodeling work in the first few years of ownership. What Charlotte needs is more architects for planning renovations. Really gone in a day, these houses?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sometimes less time than that. I mean, that's the reality. Depending on a neighborhood, homes are walking off the shelves right now, and he hit the nail on the head. Home buyers are no longer buying the perfect home. I tell people, what are you willing to compromise on? And we go from there. Because nothing's perfect. I relate it to shoes or a marriage. Nothing is perfect. You make your compromise and you make it your own when you move in. And so he is exactly right. Renovations are taking far too long these days.
So given the realities of the marketplace, as a realtor, any advice for somebody who wants a particular property in a market like this? Are you telling them to go in over asking price? Are you telling them to ask for the buyer, or the seller rather, to make changes on the property or make adjustments to the property at the asking price? What are you saying to them so that they will get the property that they want?
I say you get one shot.
Really?
You get one shot for your first impression with a home seller right now. And again, it's very neighborhood specific because it is not every neighborhood that homes are selling in multiple offers. But in the neighborhoods that they are, the home has to be priced right. Key for sellers to hear here, the home still must be priced right. It can't be overinflated or even in the hottest neighborhood, it will not sell. But if it's priced accurately and you have multiple offers, the buyer gets one shot for a first impression. One shot. And no, you're not asking a seller to make a bunch of tweaks. If you're coming up against competition, you want to look the most attractive, have the most money down, have the least amount of asks for the seller, bend over backwards, being flexible over closing date on whatever they could need to make their home transition to their new home much more palatable for them. I mean, really, you just want your best foot forward. That's why you see people writing their letters. I mean, you name it. You want to look perfect to that home seller because you don't want them to have any doubts in you.
There was an article, I think it was last Sunday, in the Observer about these love letters that people are what is that all about? What can you possibly say in one of these letters to a seller that's going to convince them that you're the buyer for them?
You'd be shocked.
If it's not the bottom line, what is it?
Bottom line is always key. I mean, numbers always talk. So that's why I tell people, put your best foot forward. You have one shot. You got to look good. You got to put your money where your mouth is. So you can't negotiate with a seller in one of these neighborhoods. It's not going to happen anymore. So if, let's say the playing field's level, you have five offers on the table. That letter, you just never know, might swing that deal. It really might. You might have offered a ton of due diligence money to the seller and so did everyone else. So that's not going to do it. Your prices are maybe within $1,000, $2,000 apart. That doesn't mean that much in the scheme of things to the seller. So what's going to tip the apple cart? I mean, this sweet letter with you and your kids and a dog, I mean, you'd be shocked what works. You can get a seller's wife to cry, and you got the hook to get that house.
Okay. Maren Brisson-Kuester, president of the Charlotte Regional Realtor Association and a broker realtor at Cottingham Chalk Hayes, and Eli Portillo, economic development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Thank you both for an hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.